Where there's muck, there's brass, so goes the saying. And according to Caroline Holmes, author of the not-so-little book of dung, there's certainly some truth in it.
Well, there were people called tossers who went in to the sewage to find brass, gold, anything that they could sell. They were the poorest of the poor. But, I mean, I suppose the greatest amount of brass that was ever found was the people who imported guano from the Chinches Islands off Peru, the Gibbs family. And actually, in the book, I decided to get quite philosophical about the guano because the actual conditions in which it was mined by Chinese virtual slaves, I compared with Dante's Inferno. And when you look at the pictures, there's the eighth level of the Inferno, they're actually swimming in excrement and it looks just like the guano mines. That's where it starts. Then the people who were involved in shipping were very often sort of forced into and couldn't get out of being tied to these cargo boats that went backwards and forwards, and I compared that to sort of the Purgatorio. And then you come to England and the Gibbs family. Master Gibbs makes his tibs selling the turds of foreign birds, and they were multi-millionaires. They brought initially into Liverpool and then into Bristol this guano, which is bird droppings. The birds have their nests in the Chincha Islands. There's very little rainfall, so you've got a combination of all the fishy diet, eggshells, dead babies, and the nests, and no rain. And it just builds up and builds up and builds up. And it absolutely transformed British agriculture because you could put it straight onto the crops and your yield went up by sort of between 5 and 10 times the amount. So in the mid-19th century, it was an absolute boon. It really helped hugely. And the Gibbs family built this extraordinary house at Tintsfield, just outside Bristol. Enormous amounts of wealth. So if you want, there's muck, there's brass. There it is. And then sort of around London and the big cities, the market gardeners built up hotbeds using dung. And they were able to bring early fruits and vegetables into the market. And they would get, 10, 20 times the price that they would get literally 6 weeks later. So that was another way, a sort of rather harder working way of getting some brass.
And apart from the obvious way of using it as some kind of fertiliser, in what other ways has dung been used?
I have to say, I have a robust nursery humour, so I have giggled. There are all sorts of silly things that you could say. One of the things I sort of giggled in horror is that they used to collect dog muck for tanners. And I can't think which would be the worst job, being the person who collected the dog muck or the person who rubbed the dog muck into the leather. It's not one I want to dwell on too much. Then, going back, Battle of Crecy was the first time we used gunpowder. The Chinese had gunpowder way, way before us. And they discovered that in stables, and in particularly in dove houses, with the droppings from the birds and the animals and urine, I might say birds only have one hole, they defecate and urinate from the same hole, just in case you'd like to know that. That builds up and it creates saltpeter or potassium nitrate. And they would come and dig that out and then mix it with all sorts of other things and make gunpowder. Charles I passed an act in 1625 forbidding people to have stone floors in their stables or their dove houses so that the saltpeter men could come at will and just take the earth from your dove house so that it could be manufactured into gunpowder.
And what about animals? How do they use it?
That's, I found very interesting. I mean, we all see the dogs going round the park sniffing each other. But there are all sorts of sophisticated messages that animals send. Otters always have their latrine at the entrance of their territory. So it's very much saying, if you don't belong to this colony of otters, go away. Hippos, when they come out of the water, male hippos in particular, wiggle their tails so that their dung spreads. I said it's a sort of scorched earth policy was the way I thought of it, to show how macho they are on the one hand, and equally they like to go foraging during the night. They then follow their trail back to the waterhole that they came from. And rabbits, they eat their droppings, first of all, to get a second lot of nutrition because their digestive systems aren't very good. Then they have what's commonly termed an area of repugnancy for all animals. They tend to defecate away from where they sleep. And it's a sort of bunny bulletin board. You can go along there and think, oh, gosh, so-and-so's been here. Oh, good, we see. Gosh, she's pregnant or anything like that. And they can read, in inverted commas, by smelling the droppings and looking at the droppings.
That's Caroline Holmes. Her book, The Not-So-Little Book of Dung, is published by Sutton.
Interviews from Passion for the Planet.
Copyright Passion for the Planet.
Listen to more interviews online.
Hear health, environment, lifestyle, personal growth and business experts when it suits you. This service is free. Register now at passionfortheplanet.com.
Find out more at passionfortheplanet.com.